Hey, everybody, welcome back to PT Tech Talk Podcast. This is episode 53. And if you're looking for the intersection of physical therapy and technology, you are in the right place. I'm one of two co-hosts. My name is Dave Kittle, and I'm a physical therapist and the founder, CEO of Vinitial. Vinitial is a texting app for refilling open appointment slots tomorrow that are on your calendar. You can check out vinitial.com for more. And as always, joined by my co-host, Rob Vining. Rob is a physical therapist, founder of PT Live, and PT Live is a live chat that allows prospective patients to chat with a physical therapist and schedule an evaluation right inside the app. You can check out ptlive.me for more. And tonight we're going to be interviewing another physical therapist, Lauren Zyax. She's a staff physical therapist and also the co-founder of Phoenix Concussion Recovery. You can check out phoenixconcussionrecovery.com for more. And before we bring on Lauren, just want to say what's up to my co-host, Rob Vining. Rob, what's up, man?
Well, we're rolling along, man. I think this is, what, going to be the third or fourth we've recorded in the last 72 hours?
Been busy, yeah.
But I wanted to welcome Lauren. Thank you so much for coming on here today and going into a little bit of the backstory, what got you into this niche of concussion recovery. Just a little backstory on yourself and then how you created Phoenix Concussion Recovery.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. So I was an athletic trainer first, and then I went to PT school, worked for the U.S. ski team doing athletic training and physical therapy mixed together. I left that, went to outpatient physical therapy, and then found myself on the receiving end of treatment when I had a brain injury in 2014. I was disappointed in the care that I received during my recovery process. And so once I started learning about the more advanced therapies like vision and vestibular therapy, I realized that was what I wanted to do in life. And I wanted to treat people who were in the same position that I was in, having trouble working, having trouble getting back into the regular activities, suffering from headaches, things like that. So I created my program over at Wasatch Physical Therapy. We have a concussion management program now over there. And then through that, I realized that there was a need for easier dissemination of information to patients. So how can we get into early education? How do we make sure people are doing the right things immediately off the bat after they're concussed? And then how do we get them back into sport without having to have expensive copays, too many visits, creating a bigger burden for these people who already have a lot of healthcare bills? And so through my work with my physician's assistant that I work with a lot, Melinda Ralstead over at ThinkHead First, we decided that there was this big void in the concussion recovery area, and that's how Phoenix came to be.
That's awesome. So we want to get into a lot. We want to hear about the development process because there's probably some physical therapists and owners that have ideas or ways to kind of digitize maybe some of their practice. We want to get into how you as a physical therapist did that, how you have this website, and then we're hearing some rumblings about an application, a native app, so we want to hear more about that. But before we get into all of the technical side, can you just speak a little bit about like the current state of concussion recovery that you see?
Sure. So concussion recovery right now, unfortunately, it's not well defined. There's a lot of different groups out there who are trying to create management programs or certification programs. A recent study done about a year and a half ago, it screened all the primary care physicians in the U.S., or at least the ones who participated, right? And they had 50% of them said they had no knowledge of concussions. And realistically, our primary care physicians should be our primary go-to for concussions. We shouldn't be going to the ER. CT scans don't really show us anything unless there's a bleed. We should be lowering our healthcare costs, lowering our burden. So our primary care physicians are one of the main people we should be using, and they don't know anything really about concussions, or a lot of them don't. And then the other big stat that people talk about in the concussion world is that it takes 17 years for information to trickle down through the whole healthcare system. Mm. And so there are people out there who are still doing things with their patients that we did 20 years ago, you know, wake them up every hour. There's no excuse for a healthcare provider to be telling people to wake them up every hour or go in a dark room until you feel better. I mean, I have patients to this day walking through the door telling me that that's what they were told by their local primary care physician. And, you know, these people are just doing their best. They have to know about everything under the sun, right? They're your gateway to all other specialties. So it's not their fault, but we need to find a way to get this information out there faster. Generally, what we do early on in concussion recovery, the education you give patients immediately after the injury will sort of dictate the way that their recovery is going to go. If you tell them the right supplements, avoid the computer, avoid going to school for the first day or two, really buckle down and get your headaches under control, most people do better early on. versus powering through work for 5 days and then having a big crash. And now you're in that 1 to 2 week cycle of having pain, things like that. The other problem with concussion recovery is we all go off of whatever the latest consensus statement is, right? So the latest one was Berlin. They came out with their new guide. It's 6 phases, I think. I don't really follow it, to be perfectly honest. I follow the rest of the guidelines, but not the consensus statement on return to sport. I respect what they're doing. The reason they make it so ambiguous is so that everybody has the right to make their own clinical choices, and I respect that. But unfortunately, if people aren't educated and they don't know what to do, then they can't make a clinical choice for themselves. And so we feel like for the majority of providers and the majority of patients, if you could create a standardized program that walks them through, most people are going to do better and they won't end up needing the more advanced treatment.
Right. It's kind of like having that information out there forever. Williams flexion stretches for back pain and, you know, bed rest for back pain. And then finally in the last 15 years, everybody's kind of gone, oh, we should stop that. Right.
So, oh, wait, you should get up and move and you'll feel better.
Scratching my head here. What? I haven't heard that before. So having that baseline and that strict information that's objective kind of disqualifies or discourages coaches and other people from making that subjective call, saying, oh, yeah, you can get back to sport today. It's just a week early. You know, no big deal.
We try to avoid that. Like, you have to hit at least 5 phases, 5 days. But I mean, really, it's 7 to 10 days minimum. There are still people out there saying, well, you had a little hit to the head. You kind of had a headache. If you feel better on Monday, you should be good to go by the midweek game. And that should not be happening. You know, I would rather you miss one extra game than you end up in a situation like I was in where it took you 18 months to feel back to your normal self. Right. It's just that one extra little hit, or we don't hear about second impact syndrome a lot anymore because the risk is lowering. The risk is there, but the occurrence rate is lowering, right? Because you're pulling people out, but that risk is still there. You put a kid in too early and there goes that 2 to 3 week recovery and it becomes 6 months, a year recovery.
And you come from a certain angle that a lot of other physical therapists don't come from, is you have experience with this personally.
Yeah, I've gotten to pay my $5,000 out of pocket max 2 years in a row.
Whoa.
So, you know, it's hard. Like, one of my big things that I talk about is that being a physical therapist, you know, you have your clinical doctorate, so you're a relatively well-educated person, right? I went to 8 years of college, unfortunately. I got to spend a 10-year at one university. But even I fell victim to someone telling me they were a specialist who, quite frankly, had no idea what they were talking about. And it took me a few months to realize it. But back then, I went from being a 4.0 student to not being able to read an article. I couldn't read a page of paper back then. So I couldn't pull out the latest research and figure out if this person knew what they were talking about. I just had to bank on my provider. Like every other patient out there, you know, most people have no idea about the medical profession. I tell people, you know, you can use your flex spending account for this, and they don't even know, they pay for a flex spending account. They don't even know what it is. So the average person really doesn't have the knowledge. If you say you know something, they bank that you know it. It's just you might know something that's 15 years old, and so you're actually hurting the patient, you know?
Exactly. So going on the tech side, can you dig into a little bit about how you got into this, not only concussion recovery, and you're deciding to expand this and use technology to make it more efficient for your patients?
Yeah, we were giving out handouts to patients, and they were doing whatever they wanted with them. You know, it's really hard when I give someone a 15-page packet by the time I gave out all the exercises, and patients would lose pages, or they get overwhelmed by the sheer size of the information that we were giving them.
Or their dog ate it.
Or, oh, there were 5 phases. I thought there were only 4. So they could get back, you know, that kind of thing. And Park City is a pretty interesting little niche in the center of Utah, right? And it's a pretty affluent area. It's pretty active area, but there are places that are pretty impoverished, not that far away. So we get patients a lot from about 45 minutes away where they don't even have a hospital in their town, or they say, if you go there, you'll die, which is probably not a great thing. But so they drive all the way down here just to go to the hospital when there's an emergency. So it gives you an idea of their healthcare environment. And they're constantly coming in with bad information. And then you have to send them away with a month's worth of recovery stuff that you want them to do.
Right.
And you have no way of getting back in touch with them. I guess now I could use one of your apps or something. Back then, you had nowhere to get in touch with them. And so we wanted to have a way that they could just check in. You know, almost everyone in the country has a smartphone or a computer. There are people without computer access, but they have access to their library. So the internet is just an easy way to do it. We went through actually a whole development process. So we have the whole app designed. We have like 50 page for a wireframe and everything. Right. It was going to be $150,000 to develop it. So that's a big price tag. And we've gotten that quotes from a bunch of people. So for everyone who's going to say you could develop it for less, when you see it, you can't.
Yeah.
we didn't have the $150,000, but we still wanted to try to see if our idea was as great as we thought it was. So we went to the website portal instead. And then there's drawbacks to that, but you just have to keep moving forward, and you can only do with whatever little tokens you have to work with. That's it. That's all you got. So you just kind of make the best out of it.
It's like an improved version of a minimal viable product, but it's well designed. I'm looking at it right now.
It
makes sense completely. You get on there and you can kind of walk yourself through it pretty quickly. Did it take a while to actually create that portion?
So I wrote out the whole first website in December. It was just supposed to be an educational support site to help drive people to the app when we had our pipe dreams that we were going to develop the app in the first 6 months and everything was going to be amazing. And number one entrepreneurs ever.
That's always the case, right?
Sounds about right. Yeah.
And then a lot of really wealthy people who we had meetings with said, I don't think so. They said, get some users, get some data, go figure it out. So they wanted us to make a minimum viable product. And I didn't want to spend all that time and money making something that really didn't do anything. So I started watching YouTube videos on how to build a website. And then I watched a YouTube video on how to put things on the website that I figured out how to build. And then I went on GoDaddy and I bought a bunch of URLs because I didn't even know what I wanted yet. So I definitely, the amount of time I spent was not as efficient probably as a coder, but it cost me a lot less money. It just cost me like all my Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays for 3 months. But we had the whole website up and going, and then we made some edits to it. We were playing around with it. Then I had this amazing meeting with a mentor who told me we were in the valley of death. So anyone who wants to develop a product out there, you get to a point where you've had enough meetings, where you've been pitching and pitching, and they are all asking for the same thing. They all wanted numbers in a product first, but we didn't have the money to build the product to get the numbers that they wanted. And so he put it so beautifully for me where he said, you're in the valley of death, and if you don't get out of the valley of death immediately, this whole project will fail and it's going to die. There's nothing you can do about it. So being a little bit crazy, I said, that's not possible. We're not going to do that. So I started asking him all kinds of questions about what we could do. And he said, take whatever money you have left and beef up your website and use that. And so that's what I did. We're about $18,000 in the hole right now, to be perfectly honest. And it's been worth every dollar we've spent, I think, has been worth it. Lots of legal fees when you're going into this kind of website. But we took everything we could. We paired up with a really great website developer. And then he beefed out everything that I just simply couldn't do on my own. So he added the shopping cart. He added the quiz. They changed the theme. They made it look a little bit nicer, all that kind of stuff.
Where did you find your developer? Was that someone locally or online?
So he's with a company locally here in Park City, but he was a patient of mine. And he's been excited about the project since back in September. And then we wanted to go a different way. We wanted to make the app. We had all these dreams. And then I came back to him and said, listen, what can you do to make this thing a viable website? Like, tell me what I need. How many billable hours would I need? What's my budget? And so he worked with us and they were really great to us. And now we have our product up and running.
The first person that developed my website, Vinitial.com, was actually a previous patient. So shout out to Razib. Rob knows this. And hey, listen, if you're a physical therapist listening to this right now, you have potential current or previous patients and clients that can help you do any of this. That's really awesome to hear.
I mean, I paid him, but he gave me a good rate. You know, they gave me a friends and family rate, which was awesome. I mean, I got almost double the hours out of him because of it. So if people believe in what you're doing, it's pretty awesome how many people step forward and say that they're interested in helping in one way or another.
For your patients or anyone else that's out there that can refer their patients and clients to your website, you mentioned the shopping cart, you mentioned the website. What would somebody get? How does that process work? What do they see and receive? What type of content. If someone's listening on iTunes or SoundCloud right now, they won't be able to see. We might do a YouTube video with the current website layout. But if someone's just listening, like, how can you describe that for them?
Sure. So when they first go on our website, there's a landing page and you have three choices. You just want to learn. You're currently concussed. That's going to take you directly to what you should do immediately. What's that first 24 to 48 hours of stuff you should do? Or you can go directly to exercise progression. The free stuff on our site is anything that's education-based. It's not plugging really any providers. It's just telling you, like, look for this type of certification in your area to get this type of therapy. The paid portion of the site, because at some point it has to fund itself.
Yeah.
So it's $9.99. We want it to be affordable. You know, there's been plenty of people who said, you know, you could bill it as a medical device and you could charge X, Y, and Z for it. And I just don't think that that's really the goal. I think the goal is that any person can afford to download a one-month membership. The one-month membership is only because we aren't your healthcare provider. So if you can't pass the five phases in a month, we want you back in your healthcare provider's office and making sure that somebody's checking you out. The 999 gives you 5 phases before you get cleared, and then you get 2 additional phases after you're cleared by your healthcare provider. You have strength, cardio, balance, flexibility, breathing exercises, and you also have vision and vestibular exercises. It's not vision and vestibular therapy, but it's very basic exercises, just something additional that we've added in based on my specialty. Pretty safe for anybody to do, pretty well explained. And so you can go in and repeat those, you know, every day if you wanted to. If you need to take 2 days off because you have a busy day at work, you have to film a bunch of podcasts, then you can go to the active recovery phase and you can do your 20 minutes of walking and stretching. It's not a big time commitment, but you're still doing something. So we want it to be a really good value for the $9.99. You could do it with your healthcare provider. You could buy a day pass to your local gym. You can do it in your basement. I have a patient who uses water bottles and cans of food for his 1 and 2 pound weights, and he does it in his basement, and he has a stationary bike in his house. So you could do whatever you need to do.
How do you have this content laid out? Is it mostly just bulleted lists, or are there some exercise modules with video walking someone through it? What does the patient get on their side?
So you take your symptom quiz. It's a 22-question test. It's the most standard quiz used in concussion recovery. And that's going to give you a score. And then based on your score, you go into whatever phase you qualify for. When you get in there, the cardio is written out, but it has a picture of the RPE scale, rating of perceived exertion. And each person is exercising on what their own perceived exertion is, right? If it's an elite athlete, their 6 out of 10 is different than my 6 out of 10, which would be the same as like grandma down the street, probably something like that. Okay. And then there's pictures and GIFs. There's only GIFs for the exercises where I could create a GIF for it. Again, we couldn't hire models. The goal is to make actually small videos for each exercise, but all of that stuff has large ticket items attached to it. And so for now, there are Adobe photos I was able to purchase, and those that had a start and stop position, I was able to create GIFs out of them. But they're all laid out, they're organized, it's into the little contained section so all your strength is together. There's a brief little description of what you should be doing in case you don't know how to do a squat properly so you don't hurt yourself. And then it goes down in the next one, flexibility, the next one, balance, and describes exactly what you should do.
Nice. So are you getting any pushback from other health practitioners, be it general practitioners, other physical therapists, athletic trainers, coaches? I'm sure there might be a little bit of pushback in that area, or they just don't say and go wink, nudge, yeah, we'll do whatever you say. And then the kids plan earlier than they should be, which has got to be frustrating.
There's all kinds of things. So the number one thing is going to be people are going to be scared that we're replacing them, right? That's human nature. And I'm an athletic trainer, and I know that my own group of people is going to be one of the biggest ones that's scared. That's not the point. The point is what's happening to these kids, and I'm not accusing anyone of letting anyone slip through the cracks, but I know that it happens all the time in any type of medical treatment area, right? And so for physical therapists who might have 15 of these guys on their schedule, making sure each and every one is doing the right thing, or if you have 300 student athletes, or if you have a football team and you're the only certified athletic trainer, we don't want people to become burdened by the amount of work that they have to do. We want these patients to be self-sufficient in that you can say, go do phase one. They can pull up phase one on the computer. They could do phase one, and you have somebody, if they're under the age of 18, watching them to make sure that they're not going to hurt themselves. And then they come back to you and they say how they did. They can still check in with you. You are still there to watch them, but it's now become standardized. It's a protocol, just like all the other protocols that we have out there. And now we know that the kids are safe and they're not deconditioned. You know, there's a lot of situations out there still where, because the return to sport protocol is so vague, people might not be doing a full recovery. A lot of people still only go off of cardio. Can you get your heart rate above 70%? And then that's how they decide if they're going to return their athlete back to sport or not. So there was a recent study that came out that showed that kids in the same season as non-concussed athletes, the concussed athletes had a higher risk of lower extremity injuries. And so you could argue that that's balance or whatever other things that come with concussions, but most likely it's deconditioning. It's the fact that they aren't strong anymore. The analogy I was using with you earlier is we would never do this with someone with an ankle injury. I would never have someone rest for 6 weeks and then get right back into sport when they were feeling better. And so concussions shouldn't be any different.
Yeah.
But there'll be all kinds of pushback. And the other big pushback is going to be that we've made it standardized so that it's not any different for any other patient, right? So people are going to say that you're just cookie cuttering the concussion process. And I don't think so. I think that if we alleviate the practitioner from having to worry about what exercises that they're doing, people can focus on what's going on with their neck, what's going on with their headaches. Do we need to refer them for vision therapy? Do they have vertigo? If you're so overwhelmed by having to treat every single piece of this injury, you're going to get stuck in the weeds and you're not going to be able to see the whole view.
Because it's almost, what percentage of physical therapists do you think have the knowledge and the capability to treat somebody with a concussion?
I think it's a lot lower than we think. I think there's a lot of certification programs out there right now, and there are some that are doing a good job. There are some that I wish would emphasize to the physical therapist that they still need to refer out for certain things and that you can't be an expert in everything and from just one course. And so I think that we just want to supplement your practice. You're still the number one. You're still the most important. Your patient technically is number one. So we want you to know that if you have someone walk through the door, you don't have to be scared. There's going to be healthcare providers out there who treat ankles and shoulders, right? And a kid comes in with a shoulder injury, and then you realize something's just not right with their head and it got missed. But you're scared because you don't know what to do. And there's a lot of liability. One of the big things about concussions is legal is by far ahead of medicine. People are being sued for things when we can't even prove one way or another if they did something wrong. And so healthcare providers are scared of these injuries, and it's nothing to be ashamed of, to be afraid of something. You should be afraid of something that you don't know anything about, right? I shouldn't be doing cardiac rehab. That would be terrifying.
Right, right.
Or I shouldn't be treating people on vents. Probably not somewhere I should be. And so it's okay to not know. But what would be great is if you knew about Phoenix, you could go on, you could have your patient watch our YouTube video for what you should do in the first 24 to 48 hours. You can go onto the portal and look for providers in your area, look for what kind of certifications you should be looking for. So you're still there supporting the patient, or you can do the manual therapy for their shoulder and their neck, and then they're doing their return to sport on the side without you in the office.
Is there a particular ideal client or customer for this, or because they go through the symptom quiz and then they get a score and your system kind of guides them into the next phase so it's not so easy for them and it has to be appropriate and challenging? Is there an ideal individual?
I mean, our target range right now is more so youth sports. So getting away from that whole D1 athletes, D2 athletes, they don't need us. They have amazing healthcare professionals with them every day. Professional athletes, they don't need us. You want to use us, because that'd be great, but otherwise. So we're looking for healthy people, really that 90%. 90% of people are going to be better within a month. The people who are outliers, Phoenix may be an appropriate education portal, but it may not be the right portal to actually follow them every step of the way, right? So the more active, healthy college kids, the youth athletes, and then the weekend warriors is mostly who we're targeting. We would love to be there for, you know, if your aunt slips and falls on the ice, hits her head and doesn't know what to do, we want to be there to support her. But most likely she's going to have to seek out a provider in her area that's going to supplement what we're doing, or vice versa, we're supplementing what they are doing. If you are doing it with your healthcare provider, this has been one question that I've already gotten from somebody, a friend of mine over on the East Coast. What if somebody has another injury? So a lot of the phases have running, but you could also do a stationary bike or swim. So I had a patient who had a bilateral FAI, so hip impingement repairs. He's never allowed to run on a treadmill again. So what do you do with that person? So we just modified it. We had him do everything on a stationary bike. Or if you have someone with a lower leg injury, they might not be able to do the squats. So you just give them more core. So the healthcare provider still will be able to adapt for the people who need more, but they won't be able to do it independently. They'll need somebody with them for each step of the way.
So what's next? Is it going to be partnering with general practitioners, athletic trainers, professional sports leagues, anything like that? NFL, wink, nudge.
Most likely what we're going to be doing is reaching out to physical therapists who work in bigger clinics to start, just for ease of us to figure out how exactly it's going to work to partner with these people. I've already talked to a couple bigger companies. They are more interested in the white labeling option. So what you can actually do is you can rebrand the entire site so that it looks like it's coming from them, but we're responsible for all the content. It's actually pretty easy to do based on the talks I've had with my developer.
Right.
So it's going to be reaching out to urgent care clinics, general practitioners, and then physical therapy offices. We want to support athletic trainers in high schools, but often those people are paid for by physical therapy offices or the hospitals in their area. It's very rare that a school actually has the funds to pay for the athletic trainer themselves.
Gotcha.
So we should be able to reach those people by going through their employers or their clinics. And then the most important thing is that people know that we're just here to work with them. Our eventual goal, you know, the website is up and running. If it was only a website, that would be fine too. Mm-hmm. I still can't get my eye off that finish line, which is our app. And so what I really want is I want our application to be made. The reason why is that we can then tap into heart rate monitors, and we can tap into locking people out of phases. So right now with a website, there's still some human decision making that's happening.
Right.
Once it becomes an app, you can actually gamify it, and it will lead them through, just like you can't play level 401 on Candy Crush before you beat level 400. Right. We can create this to be the same way. So we have it all mapped out. We just need to do our proof of concept and work with some clinics and figure out what all the bugs are and then move forward to the big project.
Have you thought about this app? Let's say we're up and running. Client, patient, individual uses it, and they're only going to probably have it on their phone for a certain amount of time, like a month or 3 months or something. If all goes well, in a perfect scenario, like they may never need your app ever again.
Correct.
Is that something you thought about? Is that an issue? Like you said, the partnering with physical therapists and owners, and then that's where you could get your funnel that way as opposed to like the consumer side.
Yeah. So what's going to be crucial as it moves into an app, a B2B model will be crucial. So working with businesses instead of directly targeting consumers. We've already gotten pushback from investors about the fact that, yeah, this is a unique user experience and they hopefully never come back again. But most people, we hope that they use our app for a month and then they delete it and they never have to think about us again. And that's terrible to tell investors. But I think that as technology starts to develop in the healthcare world, I think that investors and the metrics that count in the app world right now are going to start to change. Right now, it's all about your attention rate and how often are people keeping up with your app and how long do you keep users? And those are the metrics that really matter right now in the app world. And I think that as we start to shift and do more things in healthcare, which makes it more affordable, I think that those metrics will start to change. So I think that we're sort of a little bit early to that game, but I'd like to be first in the concussion world, but I think it'll change. And for right now, an ideal situation for me is actually an investor's worst nightmare, but I'm okay with that. And it'll all work itself out.
Yeah, because you're not looking at it from a paradigm of marketing with ads. You're looking at it from the aspect of, yes, the result of this should be you're better.
Right. No, I want you better. Yeah. I want you to go away and to be better and not have problems long term.
That's where the value is.
Yeah.
So, forget investors.
If enough people download the $9.99 program, I can do it all by myself and I don't need investors.
Yep.
The other thing is that there's 5 million concussions a year that we know of. In the sports concussion world, the SRC world, the number is about 2.5 to 3 million. But we know that the number is about 5 million if you include playground accidents and slip and falls. The number is probably closer to 9 or so because people don't believe in their healthcare providers when it comes to concussions. So you'll hear all the time, well, I didn't go to the doctor because they didn't know anything last time. So why would I go back this time? So we get our numbers from emergency care visits and then through other epidemiology research that's going on right now, you know, through athletic trainers in high schools. And that's where those numbers come from. But most likely it is much higher. And I can tell you that because I've got patients who come in 6 months after their injury and they didn't even realize that they were concussed when it first happened. They just noticed that they couldn't do things slowly over time. Things were getting worse and worse. And then we're able to pinpoint it back to their head injury. And they're like, oh, well, I just bumped my head on a mail truck, you know, that kind of thing. And it turns out it's something much bigger. So I'm not too worried about maintaining users because there's plenty of people out there who are going to continue to fall getting out of the bathtub or run into another 300-pound human at 80 miles an hour, whatever it is that they're doing. So. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy that there's approximately 5 million per year, but then potential 9 million total that are either undiagnosed or they don't seek treatment or it's mild or they feel like it's mild. The number, it really could be 10 million. It could be more.
Who knows? I mean, just look at car accidents. I mean, when people come in from a car accident, the ER doctors are there to keep you alive, right? Are you bleeding to death? Do you have a fractured spine? What's going on with you? And so often these concussions are missed because either the adrenaline is so high that people don't realize it, or they're confused, but people think there's something else. Oh, you know, they're just worked up from the car accident, but really they're confused from a concussion. And it either gets picked up days later, weeks later, months later, they're readmitted to the ER the next day because they're still dizzy, that kind of stuff. So if we could just catch people in car accidents, the number would probably go up by another couple million. Never mind all the other things out there.
Wow. All right. So for more, check out phoenixconcussionrecovery.com. Lauren, if there's someone listening in the audience that wants to catch up with you, talk to you in terms of your specialization, your expertise, or even more about how you went from being a staff physical therapist to building this product and this website and creating something great in the world that didn't exist. And luckily you were there to create it. So if someone wanted to reach out to you personally, what's the best place to do that?
Sure. You can just email me. It's ziaks.l@gmail.com. If I don't get back to you in a couple of days, send me another one because I did have a head injury. So sometimes you get scarred for later and then you no longer exist in my brain. So so I always tell people, follow up with me if I don't answer you right away, but I'm happy to answer any questions. if anyone's interested in learning more about Phoenix or how we can help them, I'm more than happy to talk about that as well. So reach out.
That's awesome. And hopefully when you get that app up and running, then we definitely have to have you on in the future again for an update.
Thanks.
You got it. So for Rob and I here at PT Tech Talk, episode 53, Lauren, thank you so much for your time. It was great to have you.
Thank you.
All right. Perfect. In the books.